Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Tuesday, September 11th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Treats for Chickens. Health and happiness for your modern backyard pet chicken. Healthy pet chicken basics. Non-toxic bug relief. Treats. Organic snacks and more. All created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com or ask for us in your local farm and feed store or favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you so much for joining us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We got a great show lined up for you today. great show lined up for you today. We've got the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy that's going to be here shortly, along with Pat, my co-host. They're broadcasting live today on location from California. Yep, all the way out in California. They are actually attending the National Heirloom Exposition there in California. So they broadcast live from there last year. We had some great guests on, very informative, and so they'll be joining us here a little bit. Again, broadcasting live, the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, Jeanette Behringer and Pat Foreman, my co-host, live on location from the National Heirloom Exposition. Heirloom, all kinds of heirloom plants and seeds and just all kinds of great stuff for homesteading. Got to love it. That'll be on today's show. We thank you very much for joining us. Let me go ahead and send a quick shout out to all the great folks in the chat room. Thank you so much for joining us. All of our regular time listeners and our newbies and our first time listeners, thank you so much for tuning in today. I also want to send a shout out to all the over-the-road truck drivers that listen to the show, all the homeschoolers that incorporate this show in their daily curriculum, and, of course, all the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this show live every day, Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. in their stores. We thank you very, very, very much. Alrighty, taking a look at this week's schedule, of course, yesterday had a great show with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Just told you about today's show. Tomorrow's show is a Small Business Wednesday, where we'll feature a small business or a sponsor tomorrow, telling us about all their new products they've come out with for the backyard chicken keeper. Then this Thursday, really looking forward to that show. Thursday, Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, is going to be joining us. It's basically saving apples, preserving apples with old-timey techniques. Preserving apples with old-timey techniques. In fact, I was down visiting my neighbor yesterday. We were sitting in a couple of chairs out in his yard just hanging out, talking about life and the garden and the weather and everything else. And he was talking about maybe heading up to the northeast Georgia mountains up near the Yellow Jay area, Jasper area, to get some fresh Georgia apples. And I said, you know, that sounded real good right now. Nice, fresh, crisp. Good old Georgia apple, so a Georgia mountain apple. So we may have to maybe put that in our upcoming trip here, maybe early October. I'll have to check and see the season. I can't believe it's, and I doubt it's over yet, but I'd love to have a nice, crisp, I don't know, maybe a Golden Delicious, maybe a Granny Smith or a Red Delicious. My favorite really are Fuji's. If I can get them fresh where they have some flavor, you know, Whole Foods or maybe a fresh market. I've gotten them before, I'm sure you have too, where they just have zero flavor. They got a little crunch to them. You start eating them and it doesn't taste like anything. Just this cold meat of nothing, of a fruit with no flavor. So definitely would love to get some good fresh apples here to eat, maybe make some apple pie, some apple sauce, some apple butter. Yum, 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 yum. So, yeah, sorry about it. I was about 3 minutes late logging on, getting on air here. I had just literally hopped off the tractor and got up here into the house, and I had to lay off about three more rows for the turnips. And but today planting will be done. Well, I say today planting will be done probably in the next 10 days to 2 weeks. I'll set in my onion sets. So that'll wrap it up. But for all practical purposes, after today, the fall garden will be in, except for when I go back and pick up some onion sets and get those in the ground as well. Definitely looking forward to that. So I'm glad. So later this afternoon, once everything will be planted, I got to get the scarecrows back up. I have to make a run to town, get some more pie pans, get those up, of course, on the scarecrows. And, of course, get some on the irrigation lines just so they can flap in the wind, keep the deer and the critters away. And then, of course, I'll also, around the perimeter of the garden, I've got about 12, 13, 14, I think it's about 14, really, of the solar night eyes units. I got about 14 of those, and I created a stand for them. It's just basically a 5-foot PVC pipe with a T at the top, and then I screwed the solar night eyes units into the T. Basically, I want them about 4 feet up out of the ground, somewhere between 4 and 4.5 feet, so they are at eye level for the deer, to keep the deer out of the garden. Used them last year. They worked fabulous, both for the fall and spring. spring/summer garden, and I took them out of the ground for a while, and then I'll get them, actually install them later this afternoon all around the garden, probably about, 20 feet apart, 20 or 30 feet apart, and then about eye level of the deer to keep the deer out. Oh, yeah, I'm not here to feed the deer. I'm here to feed my family. So we got to get those in the ground as well so they don't find it. They were great, man. Let me tell you, last year, I've told you the story a few times. If you haven't heard, we were putting in our fall garden, and people would drive by along the road. Deer are going to eat you out of house and home, boy. I'm like, nah, not worried about it. All righty. And then the police would drive by. Yeah, I drive here at night, and I shine my little spotlight out there, and I'll see deer munching away, in the field, where my now garden was. And, people drive by, and you don't have a problem with deer? No. So we put out those solar night eyes units. They've got two little red LED lights that flash on and off, solar powered, turn on in the evening, turn off during the day, and didn't have any problem with deer during the fall garden. People were amazed. What? You don't have any deer problem? Nope. And then people would walk by at night and say, what are those flashing lights? And I would tell them, that is a secret laser detection system to keep people out of my garden. You don't have to know it's a deer repellent or an animal repellent. It's actually being used as a people repellent, too. Yeah, it's a secret laser system that keeps that alarms me anytime somebody infiltrates my perimeter. Including deer. Oh my goodness! So yeah, they work. They work real well. I'm living proof that kept the deer out of the garden. Had no problems whatsoever. So definitely going to get those back in the ground with the scarecrows and the pie pans today in the garden. Mark that off the list for this year. So glad. And then what I'll do is I'll put the harrow back on and harrow kind of around the outside and the edges to make it look real nice where we've been driving on it and walking over it, and everything will be nice and purdy. And the garden, the fall garden 2012 will be in. So that's what we've been doing today. So I was about 3 minutes late because I had to run out and do three more rows for the turnips. So got to love it. Beautiful day here at the homestead. It's probably in the, right now it's probably around 80 degrees, probably get up to about 85, 87 today. In the evenings it's being probably around 59 to 62, nice and cool. Fall is slowly but surely reaching around here. So, yeah, and talking about the red light district for the deer, yeah, those solar night eyes, absolutely. So, yep, remember, two lights are better than one. Solar Night Eyes has two red flashing LED lights instead of just one, so more bang for your buck. So God love it. Heading up to Atlanta this weekend. We're going to head out of here Friday after the radio show, and we'll be checking into a little local hotel up there in the just north of Atlanta in the Marietta area. I've been invited to be in a parade. Yep, somebody actually wanted the Chicken Whisperer to ride on a float and wave at all the great folks along the parade route. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. It'll be, other than participating in a parade with one of the chicken groups up in Atlanta probably about 4 years ago, this was the first parade I've actually been invited to participate in as a special guest and to ride on a float. So definitely looking forward to that. So let me do a sound check here real quick in the chat room and see who's having issues, who's not having. Just try to reload if you're having some sound issues. Lots of people coming in about this time and getting in there. So sound check. Okay, everybody seems to be hearing me fine. So we appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yeah, Friday we'll be leaving here after the radio show, heading up there, checking into the hotel room. And then Saturday there's a big, it's called the East Cobbler Festival and Parade and Festival. And East Cobbler because it's basically in Cobb County, one of the largest metropolitan counties in the Atlanta area, and it'll be a nice parade, and I'll be the guest of the the Cobb County Backyard Chicken Alliance, I believe it is, and they've been working real hard to get the laws changed there, so they try to be as public as possible, and they invited me up to ride on their float and wave to everybody as the Chicken Whisperer. They've got some real nice banners made for the side of the float. Looking forward to that. And after the parade's over, I'll be hanging out at their booth sharing the chicken love, and so I'll be there for a little while talking to folks, educating them, getting people to sign the petition, just educating them all about the great benefits of backyard poultry and getting that petition signed so they can go and present that. I know they got well over 2,000 signatures already, but it would be great if they could get 5, maybe 10,000 signatures before they present it. So being a parade this weekend, looking forward to that. It's going to be fun. And then let's see what else is going on. Oh, tomorrow, I'll have to look at the schedule, but I think tomorrow's radio show is still scheduled regularly. I'll check on the time change, but I've got a very important conference call. I believe it'll be right after the radio show with, of course, Tractor Supply. Many of you know I've worked with them in the past. I've made 5 videos, informational videos for them. I'm under contract to make 8 more by the end of the year for their 2013 Chick Days website and Chick page. But we're looking to do a little bit more with them. So tomorrow after the radio show, big important conference call with a lot of decision makers up at Tractor Supply in Nashville. And then if it goes well, then we'll look at maybe sometime this fall stopping by at their headquarters and making sure everything's planned and we can ink that contract and get everything on the road regarding our relationship with Tractor Supply, or I guess an additional relationship with Tractor Supply other than just making the information videos for them and their website. So it's good to have them on board and one way or the other, whether it's the videos or we get some new marketing contract done with them. So looking forward to it. Gotta love it. Definitely Poet's Wife will let you know about any trips to Nashville. Got a big fan base in Nashville. Love Nashville as a town, me and Jim both. Lots of great events, Grand Ole Opry, the whole nine yards. So I will definitely, without a doubt, you'll be the first to know when we be planning on stopping in Nashville, because we'll definitely hit the Opry again. And actually, Caleb, he'll enjoy the Opry. He's already been once, and breaking him in real good here in the South. Caleb went to the Opry and hung out for about an hour and then fell asleep. But nonetheless, we got pictures of Caleb at the Grand Ole Opry, so we love that. And you can listen to it live online. It's Tuesday nights, Friday nights, and Saturday nights. And I try to listen as much as I can. With it getting darker now, earlier, I'll probably be in earlier, which then I can remember to listen. Because I think it's a 7 p.m. And so a lot of times I'll miss it because I'll be out doing something in the garden or out in the yard or something and come in late. Or maybe I'm out doing my walk, my 1.5-2 mile walk, depending on the light. And of course, now with it walking, getting dark sooner. Soon, I told Caleb, I said, we're going to have to be leaving the house about 4:30 if we're going to get this 2 mile walk in the evenings. Well, I may have to start walking in the mornings when the sun comes up instead of the evenings. I don't know about you, but I'm not a big fan of the daylight saving times and all of a sudden getting dark at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I just love the long days. You can do so much, and not a big fan of the short days. But hey, I guess it comes with the territory. But I do love the fall garden. And I probably love the fall garden maybe even a little bit more than a spring summer garden. It's a little cooler, so it's a joy to work in, and it's just the bugs aren't there, the gnats here in South Georgia. So definitely love that that fall garden. Gotta love it. All righty, so let me get over here and let's see. What we'll do is we'll do a very, very short commercial break, and we come back because I want to limit my commercial breaks while we have them on, Jeanette Behringer and Pat Foreman. So let me go to a commercial break here real quick, and when we return, we'll welcome Jeanette Behringer with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. They're broadcasting live out in California. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back right after this short break. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks. Snap Lock Chicken Coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze.
Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It's now time to go right to the phone lines. And our guest segment today, of course, is the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. The American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and they're broadcasting out of California. And, of course, just to let you know, our special guest segment today is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. They are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com. All righty, let's go to the phone lines and bring on Jeanette Berenger with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Hey, Jeanette.
Hey, Andy. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you perfectly. Thank you very much for joining us today. Heard from Pat that this event that y'all are at is absolutely tremendous. And have y'all hooked up already today?
Yeah, over the phone. I haven't caught up with her this morning yet. You know, Pat, when she hits the ground, she's moving pretty quick. So I'm sure we'll run into each other.
Okay.
But, we're here at the National Heirloom Expo. And we're here in Santa Rosa, California, and this is the second one they've done. I broadcasted from the first one last year.
Yeah.
I thought what would be kind of fun is to talk to some of the people that brought some heritage breeds to the expo. And I have a lady here by the name of Debbie, and she's got Navajo Churro sheep. And I thought we could start off having her talk about the sheep and what brings her here.
That sounds fabulous. I remember last year we did this, and it was one of the best shows because we got to really learn about a lot of heritage breeds, again, different types of animals, and a lot of people have got contacts out, and people, hey, can I contact them, or I'm interested in this, and it just really sparked a lot of interest for the heirloom exposition across the country. So, yeah, that sounds like a plan.
Okay, well, without further ado, I'll give you to Debbie, and she'll talk about her sheep and what's going on with them.
Sounds great.
And I'm also going to introduce you to a couple of Navajo weavers who are just arriving.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, the Navajo Churro sheep is one of the oldest breeds in history. The sheep go back to Abraham and before in the Euphrates River Valley.
Wow.
And they've spread all through the Middle East. And, of course, you know, Arabic countries in North Africa and Spain, brought here to America in 1540 with Coronado. And they became one of the most popular breeds for a while. You know, they were hardy and they could withstand desert temperatures and and everything. And they come in at least 15 colors. They're a double-coated fleece. It's coarse. They can have no horns, two horns, four horns, and on occasion six horns. And I have in the pen a ewe that was born with six horns, but two of them fused together, so she looks like a four horn.
Wow.
They are quite awesome. They were almost killed off several times. They were killed off in Spain after Coronado brought them here. They were almost killed off by the American government because Navajos weren't assimilating into white culture.
Right.
And at one point, they were down to less than 75.
My.
So We are a very, at one point we were critically endangered. Now we're on the rarer list. There's about 5,000 of them in the world. And I'm going to introduce you to, if I can get some Navajo people talking. They came with their rugs and blankets.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Susie. Say hi.
Hi.
Hey.
See?
You're a weaver.
I'm a Navajo weaver from Arizona.
Wonderful.
Okay. And Grandma Katie is here. She's awesome. And she does not speak English. So she won't say anything. However, for the moment. However, if you come out, you're going to see, you can see rugs made from the wool of these sheep and blankets and all kinds of wonderful things. So
that sounds awesome.
I hope people come. You know, the sheep are gorgeous. I mean, 15 colors. You can't get bored.
I was going to say, 15 colors, that's really amazing. And then, of course, it sounds like they're heat and drought tolerant for that particular breed, which is great for people to know. Give us an idea, because I know, again, probably 70% of our listeners and fans are women, so they're like, ooh, homemade rugs and things like that. Tell us, but you know, made from the Navajo, from this particular rare breed heritage sheep. But give us an idea, because I know inquiring minds are going to want to know if you can look at some of the products that they have there. Give us a size comparison of what some of the sizes of the rugs are, and let us know about kind of what they cost based on the time, maybe the time that goes involved. If you can give us the size of one of the items she has, about how long it takes to make it, and then the cost for our listeners.
Okay. First of all, are any of the rugs really, really big ones? Some of them are very big. They take 3 to 6 months.
Okay.
And the price would be, they're telling me about this because they just got here.
No, no problem.
About $1,200, but then there are some small ones for $200 or maybe one or two that are really, there's $200 and $400, $75 for some of the smallest ones. There will also be felted stuff from a lady from Poland who used the wool to make felted hats. And those are also awesome and very warm.
I bet.
And, you know, we have a few things like that also. So just come out. And by the way, 15 colors means a lot more shades.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So that's really, if the folks listening are familiar with example for you know, first thing that came to mind when she was talking about the prices, that if you go and try to find, because we looked when we bought the homestead down here at some of the locals that made quilts for the bed, and they were, you know, again, the time it takes, the quality, the handmade, they were up there $1,200, $1,500, $1,600 for homemade. So so very good. Again, you've got this awesome product made by Navajo from these heritage breed sheep. Handmade, could be, take 3 to 6 months to make a large one for $1,200.
Okay. That's correct. And also they hand spin this on a spindle, not a wheel.
Okay, on a spindle, not a wheel.
And there will be we will be demoing spinning with a spindle. I brought some wool.
All right.
Okay. So do you have any other questions?
If somebody was interested, now do you actually breed the sheep? Do you sell the sheep? Is this for personal use that you have? Or if we have somebody that's listening that might be interested in getting more information other than going to the ALBC, is there a way that do you sell nationally? Do you breed these for sale?
I breed them for sale. I sell wool and send it all over the United States. You can contact me, Debbie Bradford, at P.O. Box 495, Hopland, H-O-P-L-A-N-D, California, 95449. And a cool thing about Hopland is we were the first place in the entire United States to ban GMOs, was Mendocino County.
So the GMOs are banned in the entire – tell me more about that. GMOs in this county or just the city you're in?
In our whole county, Mendocino County, we had Monsanto spending $6.5 million to defeat it, and the people of Mendocino County voted in favor of banning GMOs. So we were the first, not only place in the United States, the first county in the United States to do that. So that's pretty cool.
Now tell me, yeah, pretty cool. That's awesome. Tell me how that works now. So number one, what does that really mean? Does it mean, for example, the commercial farmers in the county can't use any of the GMO product that they plant? What about like personal homesteads or maybe a personal backyard garden regarding that? Does it also mean that stores can't sell any GMO product and cereal? Or what exactly does that mean?
What that means is nobody can plant it. At this point, it's in so many foods that I'm hoping that we all vote in favor of labeling, because 90% of corn products in the grocery stores are GMO.
Absolutely. And you think we have to label what goes in our mattress, we should be able to at least have to label what goes on in our food.
Exactly. Considering the fact that they did a test of, and I know this isn't very many, but there were 21 pregnant human mothers, and they tested their unborn fetuses, and 19 of the 21 of them were already filled with GMO in their bloodstream. And that is scary. That means that we all have it. And I think that's the biggest unrecognized experiment on the human race in history.
So you can buy cereal at the store that may have GMO in it, obviously. It sounds like the count. But as far as planting, you can't plant any GMO in the ground in that particular county.
That's correct. Also, you can't breed anything. So that's nice, because there are some breeds of animals that are now GMO, sadly.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Wow, that's really amazing. I'll have to... That's neat. And the first, are there other counties across the country that have followed suit?
The ones all around us have tried, and they have all failed. Monsanto has won out on all the ones around us, which gives us a lot of concern. I know that the entire state of Montana is now covered with GMO wild canola flowers plants all over the state now, and that there's a grass that's gotten loose in Oregon that is a GMO grass. So that's close. I don't like that.
So now with Monsanto, I guess once this movement started, it came to a vote, and so the county had – it was, I guess, one of the questions or something that you could vote on when you went to the polls to vote this. And so the money that Monsanto spent trying to fight this, I guess, came with television ads, newspaper ads, and things like that to try to get people to vote yes, not no.
Yes,
that's correct. Or I guess vice versa, right.
Yeah, yes for the Monsanto, and they had local people that were very well known. But fortunately, a lot of wineries in Mendocino County are organic, and they voted no, and so all their workers voted no. The fishery people were really concerned, so they voted no, and a lot of agricultural people voted no.
Huh. That is absolutely amazing. That's very cool. Maybe when I run for mayor... this little town, I can be one of those things. We can become a UN-free zone here. I know you can do that. I've looked information up about that. A UN-free zone, and then I've looked at that's the first time I've heard a county actually becoming non-GMO. That's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that with us. That's a first. I hadn't heard of that before, and congratulations on all your hard work for doing that.
Well, thank you very much, and probably you need to talk to other people now, don't
you? Yeah, it'll be fine, sure.
Okay, because I've got to go take care of my poor Navajo people that just came. Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Andy. Hey, we're going to mosey on over to the poultry section, and as we have it, there is an APA-sanctioned poultry show here, and... what's great about it is it's a small show that attracts a lot of people that are just beginning out. And we have a fantastic judge with us today named Walt Leonard, who was here yesterday. And he's been with the APA a long time, and he's still very enthusiastic and a great mentor for the people that have questions about their birds. For some people, this may be the first time ever that they've brought a chicken or a turkey to a poultry show, And Walt's been really great at answering questions and, you know, if my bird didn't win, why didn't it win? And he'll walk them through the process. And I'm hoping we can catch up with him. He was moseying around a little while ago, and he said he'd be happy to come on the show. And so,
great.
As you can hear, we're moseying on over. Here we've got turkeys. We've got a great showing of turkeys. We've got, looks like we've got some black Spanish. We've got some Narragansetts, Royal Palm, and then, maybe a couple hundred different varieties of chicken. And we've got doves, and then we have a rabbit display here. And, I see Walt. Let me see if I can get a hold of him for a minute. Walt,
all right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is Andy Schneider, and I kind of told him about the show and you helping to judge us last year. And
yeah.
Here you go.
I don't know.
Andy, here's
hey.
Walt.
Okay.
Hi.
Hey, Walt, thanks for joining us. We appreciate all your hard work with the, is it the APA or the ABA, or both?
Well, I belong to both, and this meet is both APA and ABA.
Very good. So, about how many birds were entered in this show this year?
220. And,
very good.
Each year it's going up. It's a new show, and so it's going to take a while to develop it. And it's in the middle of the week, so that doesn't
yeah.
help.
That's true too, but I bet with this particular show being the you know, the national you know the heirloom exposition that there are some really beautiful breeds there this year.
There are. It's kind of a difficult time of year to show birds because generally they're molting in the summer here, but there are some good looking birds, and I expect the show to be a very nice show as it goes along through the years. There, the whole expo is. Really something that people should come and see that, you know, they have to be out here in the West Coast, of course. But
exactly. Yeah, maybe we can put that on our wish list for future years to try to get there and attend. So Jeanette was saying you do a fabulous job kind of, you know, not just judging and walking away, but, again, explaining to folks, that, you know, why their bird won or why it didn't win or where they can improve this, that, and the other, which obviously is very important when you know, when talking to the people who have entered the birds, so they kind of have that idea of what they need to improve. So that's kudos to you, obviously, for that. Any more shows upcoming that you'll be judging at?
I don't usually judge in California. I'm an exhibitor. I prefer showing the birds. I haven't worked that out of my system yet. But so I usually judge in other places, like Columbus and, you know, big shows around that way. But right now is our beginning of our show season at the end of September here, so there will be about 15 shows that I'll be showing at.
Tell us, what breeds did you enter there at the expo?
I'm judging, so I can't enter anything.
Oh, judging. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I raise a lot of waterfowl. That's become close to my heart as I got older here. I really enjoy them. But I have a lot of chickens. I raised Oriental breeds, the Shimos, Aciels. I raised Leghorns, Modern Game, Old English Game, Cochin or Bantams, which is a new upcoming breed that hopefully will be accepted in the APA standard before too long. Over my career, I've done this for almost 50 years, so... raised a lot of birds. Tens of thousands.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's a great hobby. And there's a lot of people, as you know, that are interested now. And so I enjoy helping them as far as showing them the way, so to speak, when they show these birds. Because generally, they don't have a good idea when they first start, like anything else. You can't go into it knowing everything you need to know. So that's why I try to help in shows like this where I can do it. The larger show is a little harder because you have to judge 300-400 birds, and that doesn't allow a lot of time to talk to people until after the judging. So.
Have you seen an increase because I know that the backyard poultry movement is growing just amazingly, especially over the last, say, decade. Are you seeing a lot of the folks that have kind of started with backyard poultry visiting the shows and maybe getting interested in actually showing their chickens now that the backyard movement's grown so much?
Absolutely, yes. There's a lot of them start out saying they are not interested in showing, but once they come to something like this and they see the other birds, it spurs them on. Not all people want to show, and but I see a lot more exhibitors now. The Pacific Poultry Breeders is having the APA National at the end of January in Roseville, California, in Stockton, California, and that'll be about a 3,000 bird show. And many of these people that are visiting today and other ones that couldn't make it today will be going to that show, not necessarily as exhibitors, but folks that want to see the birds. And many times, once they see what's there and understand that the people are helpful and so on, they become much more interested in showing. It's not for everybody, but it's a good place to go and look at birds to see what they should look like. And if you have questions, generally the judges are available to make comments, whatnot, after the judging. So it's quite amazing. I'm an older fellow. I'm 74. So to me, to see this kind of new interest is really exciting. Santa Rosa here, the city, just last week changed their rules about having poultry. So now you can have hens in the city proper. So that's
great.
That's the direction. Yeah, and I expect that to see that in other communities because the interest is so great now. And the people are writing letters and whatnot to change some of these zoning laws.
Oh, yeah, there are fights going on all over the country right now, and from Atlanta to California, and a lot of them are being very, very successful with getting a few backyard chickens allowed, hens. You are correct, yep, and so we'll just get people to continue to do that, and you know, there's no way that if they look at the factual information, how they can deny it or not allow it without just being totally closed-minded. So, yep, congratulations to the folks there in that town that I'm sure worked hard and got that change. So, very, very good.
Yeah. Well, it's, I've never seen this much interest in the whole time I've been in poultry, which is from 1970 on. Actually, earlier than that, I had them in San Francisco, if you can believe that. But back in those days, no one cared. I had roosters and everything else. So.
Right.
But nowadays, it's a little tougher, but it is changing. And, oh, my word, I just saw an exhibitor that's from Florida. Wow. yeah, so there's people visiting here from other states, which is great.
All the way from Florida. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Long way to travel to show some birds, but I guess if that they're, you know, into the hobby and they love what they do, it's just something they decide.
Well, I fly. I don't do as much as I used to, but I would exhibit in Minnesota, Ohio, South Carolina, wherever. I flew a lot of birds around in my day. So that's how hardcore I am when it comes to showing.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Appreciate it. Good luck to you, and I'm sure the show will be a successful one.
I'm sure it will, and thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Andy.
Hey. Hey, got a question for you from the chat room.
Sure.
Actually, two questions in here. One was asking, let's see, let me scroll up and see if I can find it. It was a basic question about if you could recommend a good heritage breed for free range, a good free range heritage breed.
Egg layer or broiler or both?
I'll say egg layer because they didn't specify in the chat room.
Well, the Australorps are pretty good, although it's tough to outlay a Leghorn. And I've got to tell you, when my Leghorns are out and about, whether it's pasture or wooded areas, I don't know if they even eat the grain that I put out for them. You know, at least in the summertime, they're very effective rangers, and they can produce more eggs with less food than any other breed, which is why they dominate the egg industry. But if you're looking for something a little more laid back and has a little bit better meat proportions, maybe an Australorp will be good. And then depending on where you live, there are others that can be good for both, you know, like one of my favorites, the Buckeyes. They're very active foragers, and they're halfway decent egg layers. They can lay about 150 eggs a year, which isn't a lot, but they've got great meat proportions, and we just processed some, I think, 14-week-old birds, and we were real surprised at how nice the meat proportions were. And so those would be my suggestions.
Okay, great, perfect. And another question we had about, you know, the GMO, somebody asked if there's a way to, let me scroll back up here and see if I can find it. Just one second. Okay. Please ask if once an animal, pig, cow, chicken, whatever, has been fed GMO feed and they are switched to non-GMO feed, Isn't that still in their bloodstream, or is there a way to kind of purge the GMO out of them if you switch them to say an all organic feed, or do you have to pretty much start from scratch?
Well, I'm really not sure. You know, we're just starting to find out the effects of GMO, if there are any at all, and so. I can't answer the question. I would hope that if you stopped using it, that it'd eventually get out of the bloodstream. I can't answer that, unfortunately.
No, I understand. It was in the chat room, and I wanted to make sure I got that listed to you. So since it was posted, so no problem. Okay, we'll continue.
Well, I was hoping to hook you up with some rabbit folks here. Do we still have time?
Oh yeah, plenty of time.
Yeah, okay, hold on. Let me hook you up with a lady here who's been organizing the rabbit show, and she's with the Sonoma-Marin County Rabbit Association. She's also a member of ARBA, and she's helping to organize the rabbit show. And we went from having just a couple last year to close to maybe 50 here this morning.
All right.
And she had agreed to talk with us, and right here. You want to talk a little bit about yourself and the show?
Sure. Andy. Hi, Andy.
Hey, how you doing? So you got the rabbits there, entered into the rabbit show there today.
Yes, you do. We've got, I would probably say not a lot this year, about 33. We have some heritage breeds and some standard ARBA breeds, which can be, you know, which can be used for, you know, showing basically or a farm use consumption.
Uh-huh.
So, and heritage breeds would be your lilacs, your silvers, and then some standard commercial breeds, which would be Californians, New Zealands, American chinchillas are a heritage breed as well, giant chinchillas.
Okay, perfect. And so they'll have the rabbit show pretty much just like the chicken show. They've got a judge that'll judge on.
Rink Stacy is our judge. He is an ARBA judge that's local. He's from Escalon, the fantastic judge, and he's going to be not doing your regular standard show, but just, you know, looking at the rabbits, looking at their type, comparing them to the ARBA standard of perfection to see how they're looking.
That's awesome. And you talked about the New Zealands and the there was another one you mentioned, the
Californian,
right? I'm familiar with those. We had some New Zealands here that we raised for meat here on the homestead for the first time. And so, what are some? You named a couple of others I wasn't familiar with. Some heritage breeds for our listeners. What are some others that people may be interested in raising?
some really nice heritage breeds. You know, some people have issues with eye color. They don't want the red-eyed rabbit. So some other nice options would be Americans. Lilacs are absolutely beautiful. They're a fine-boned rabbit, so the bone-to-meat ratio is very good. You've got silvers. They're a super fine bone, but their meat ratio is not quite there. They were one of the very first domesticated rabbits. So it depends on what people are growing out for. If you're looking for a really good homestead rabbit, something that be dressed out, you want something a little bit bigger.
Right.
So you're looking at the Americans, the Californians, the New Zealands, lilacs, giant chinchillas. Things that have a little bit more density.
Somebody in the chat room had mentioned, I guess, a line of New Zealand's called from John Neff. Are you familiar with that? John Neff.
I am not. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm not familiar with
that. No, that's fine.
That.
He had mentioned maybe somebody local. He's in Florida, so maybe somebody who's got a good line of New Zealand's. And then they said something about Flemish Giants.
Flemish Giants are another good large breed. Yes, there's lots of really good large breeds. Actually, I'm giving a talk on Thursday about homesteading and meat rabbits. My background is I am a farmer. I'm a nurse by profession. But, I will be talking about meat rabbits and homesteading and, you know, what you can do and what are the best rabbits. And there are a lot of bigger breeds that are good producers. You have to remember, the bigger the breed, the more babies they're going to be having as well. So, you know, you might only need a buck, you know, one buck and a doe if you've got a small, you know, small or small extended family that you're, you know, homesteading for.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. That's awesome. Yeah, I was reading an article about, I can't remember where it was, about, you know, the comparison rabbits versus chickens for, you know, the homesteader and, you know, feeding your family and the rate that they grow and the rate that they reproduce and then also the equal, you know, the fertilizer that they produce with their waste.
Okay.
You know, rabbit could be, even though, of course, being the chicken whisperer, I'm partial to chickens, a lot of folks think rabbits may be the ideal homestead provider.
They really are, and you have to remember that rabbits are one of the American Heart Association's number one meat. For protein, vitamins, fat content. And you remember that a rabbit, let's just say a New Zealand or Californian, is going to have anywhere from a litter of 6 to 12 rabbits.
And that's about every 28 days or something like that?
Yes, you are correct. 28 to 31 days is the standard gestation of a rabbit. And remember, rabbits are induced ovulators. So when you breed them, they don't cycle like a dog would cycle or something like that.
Right.
And for somebody that lives in the city, you know, you can have a couple of rabbits. And we actually sell our rabbit manure. I mean, rabbit manure is fantastic. So you have a couple of chickens, a couple of rabbits, your garden, a couple of fruit trees.
Oh, yeah.
You're good to go.
Now, I had the classic problem, since you're going to be giving a talk on this week. It was my first try with rabbits. I am definitely not the rabbit whisperer by any means. And I had a problem. I had the ones that I had them long enough to have, I guess, two litters, you would call it. And I don't know if it was the male or the female that basically killed/ate the babies. So I hear that's pretty common. But there's what in your class would you say teach me to try to prevent that? Once as soon as maybe they are born, get the males out of the picture and separate them until they're big enough to reenter. What did I do wrong?
What did I do wrong? Okay, first off, you would never leave a male in with a female once they've bred. So.
Okay.
When you're breeding, and you know we breed for 2 to 3 fall off. You want to be breeding within a 24-hour period, and then you want to remove that male. You don't want that male in with that female. He then becomes a threat. So especially once the doe kindles, then you want to be sure that there's nothing that bothers her. You got to remember they still have that predatorial awareness,
mm-hmm.
and that could a bird, that could be you, that could be all kind of noise, it can be anything. So you want to make sure they're in an area where they can shelter those babies, they've got a good nesting box
mm-hmm.
with good nesting material. Some rabbits will cannibalize their babies, even the does will. And the way I look at it is something was wrong. They will, if they do get scared, they will do that. If something's wrong with the babies, they will do that.
Okay.
For the most part, I have only, in my years of raising rabbits, I have only had that happen two times.
Wow.
And I'm talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of litters. So I think just looking at the surroundings, looking where you have your rabbits, where they're housed, making sure that doe feels safe with those babies, and not having that male anywhere near her.
Got you. So that was my mistake. That first time was we had the males in there, and then the second time I think we separated them, but I think we still had the problem, or we might have missed one. So, again, first run through that. We will try it again, and I guess practice makes perfect.
Absolutely. Give that doe her own little, you know, domain and make sure she's feeling safe and she's covered, especially when it's due to kindling time.
Okay.
And then you raise those babies up. Remember, those babies are already at 70 days. Market weight is 5 to 6 pounds. That's when they're the best. And that's a pretty good turnaround time.
Very good. Yeah, amazing. Very, very quick. Very, very quick. All righty. Well, this chock full of information, great stuff. And I really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you for your time.
No problem. Thank you so much. I'll turn you back over.
Sounds good.
You're welcome.
So don't forget, create your domain so your doe feels safe.
Exactly. Absolutely. Jessica in the chat room was laughing. She says, yeah, get that mail out of there.
Yeah.
Give us some time alone.
How are we doing for time? Are we still able to talk to any other folks? Or do you need
plenty
break?
Plenty of time. I will take a break, though. It's coming right at 1 o'clock, and we've got, like I said, when we come back from break, we still got about 20 or 30 minutes. Or, again, you may have something that you got to go to speak, but we'll go to a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk to a few more vendors there at the expo. So we'll be back right after this break, folks. We're talking with Jeanette Barringer with American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and she's broadcasting live on location from the National Heirloom Exposition in California. So we'll return right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for joining us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And I have to tell you that I knew, I don't know, maybe y'all heard it out there in Radio Land. I heard it. I don't know if you did. But if you listen very carefully, we know now that Pat is in queue. Pat is here with us. And I don't know if you knew, but I knew because I heard this.
I've had the most amazing morning. Sorry to sign in late, but my phone disappeared. And I was looking and looking and looking for it. Anyway, as I was unpacking and opened the trunk, there it was. even having called myself, left a message, and sure enough, I was there. So I'm now here at the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. I know Jeanette's out interviewing people. I heard just the end of that last one. And gosh, wish you were here, truly. It's a phenomenal fair.
Sounds awesome. It really does.
It is incredible. I mean, I had tears in my eyes last night. I was looking at this huge mound of gourds, all different kinds of melons and gourds, almost clear to the ceiling. Of course, I've got photos. I'll send you some and put some on Facebook. But
right. It
is absolutely incredible what nature can do with these different seeds and the different things that feed us. I mean, it's absolutely wonderful. So anyway, how's everything doing?
We may have to put this. I'm so jealous. We may have to put this on one of our trips for next year.
We'll
have the camper by then, and we'll just head out to the West Coast. People have been begging for us to come out there. So that may be something we have to do. Hey, let me bring Jeanette back on here, and we'll have you both on live. Jeanette, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
We got Pat on it.
Jeanette. Hey, nice looking booth you brought.
I didn't quite finish putting everything up because I wanted to be on time for the show, but I'll be back over there afterwards. But
where are you now? Are you over by the animals?
Of course I am. What kind of questions?
I know, it's like a magnet, isn't it? Animal magnet. So I'm gonna mosey over that way past these trash containers that look like Holsteins here.
Well, right now I'm standing next to a breed that is quite special, and it's a rare sight to see them, and that's the Ocotelki horse. And they're by far one of the oldest breeds known to exist, and they're an ancient race that was probably one of the animals that was used to create the thoroughbred horse. And if you want to talk about an extreme athlete, it's the Ocotelki. And there are few horses that are as athletic as these guys are. And as a result, they're not a horse for everybody. You know, definitely not for a novice rider. But if you're looking to do endurance or eventing, there are few horses that could really step up to the plate like an Ocotelki could. And there's this gorgeous gelding here. And I'm going to pass it to his owner, Sabrina. And she's been sitting here all night with very little sleep, making sure that he's calm. And I'll pass you on to her.
Hi there. Thanks. My name is Sabrina. I'm from here in Santa Rosa.
and I own Atlee the Acolteke. He is 7 years old, and like she said, they are very rare. There's about 3,500 left in the whole world.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
They do excel, like she was saying, in every discipline, mainly jumping and endurance, just great long-distance horses. And again, like she said, they aren't for everybody. They are definitely high-spirited. But he's actually settling in pretty well. So thanks so much for stopping by, and hope to see you guys too.
Yes.
Go ahead, Pat.
Can we ask some questions about the Acquatechies? Is she still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. So how long have you been breeding them? What got you into this particular breed?
Actually, I am not the breeder. The breeder is in Washington. I actually got him from another lady that bought him from the breeder, and he just didn't work out for her. And before I went to go see him, I really didn't know anything about the breed, and I kind of just Googled him on my own, and then I've been in pretty close contact with the breeder, and she's really helpful. Like I said, they're just amazing, amazing, unique horses. I've had him since he was about 2, and he is now 7. So I've only had him for about 5 years.
So he's a gelding?
What was that?
Is he a gelding or a stallion?
Oh, he's a gelding. He's definitely gelded.
Okay. So he's only 7 years old. He's just like a teenager.
Oh, yes. He is definitely a teenager.
Wow. So are you riding them in eventing or cross country?
I'm the local president for our local Gymkhana club. So I went in a whole different discipline with him. And they, for being so tall and lanky, they are extremely handy, amazing horses.
Wow. And you said what club was that?
Oh, the California Gymkhana Association.
Gymkhana.
Yeah, so we do all kinds of timed speed events. Yeah, so they are, and especially with him, he is very tall, and he has a really long stride. So as opposed to like a quarter horse, he can get places without much effort.
It's like having Michael Jackson on your team instead of Pee Wee's or something.
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome. So have you found others that are buying the breed to help preserve it and to use them for the racing?
You know what? I'm not too familiar with the ones outside of the country. I am a member of quite a few of the group, so I kind of get like a little bit of information from them. But the breeders are definitely very responsible breeders. They don't overbreed. That's why there is, just not very many around. They're not overbred like most of the breeds around here. So it is definitely really nice to have a piece of history and something so rare.
Yeah, that does make it special, doesn't it? That you just under it's something not only rare but precious and has such a history to it.
Exactly.
Are you still on the line?
Oh, here she's getting ready to take pictures. Hold on 1 second.
photo opportunity, definitely.
Yeah.
That's great.
You had a question?
Yeah, Jeanette, were these horses originally bred for a long distance or running? I mean, what was there?
They were. These horses were bred in Turkmenistan and Afghanistan.
Okay.
They can get traced back over 2,000 years ago or more. They can't even go back all the way. And basically, the kind of lifestyle they were bred for is nomadic. And a family would travel around with the stallion and a mare and maybe the foal. And the animals would actually sleep in the tents with them. And the animals
that
were bred along with, I see you coming around the corner.
you know, horses can snore. I wonder if they got much sleep with sleeping in their horse in the tent.
The interesting thing, if you read the last ALBC newsletter, we had an article on this breed, and it was actually developed simultaneously with the Saluki dog. And interestingly, both animals created for the same purpose, which was hunting in the desert, in the high desert. And anatomically, they've got a lot of similarities. They're long and lean. They have a very short coat. Their personalities are similar. Sometimes they can be a bit aloof, or they can be just really centered on one person. And these animals, the way they were used was with falcons. And so the hunters would be riding the horse. The dogs would be chasing. Would you stop rubbing that horse's butt, cat?
I'm here scratching the rump, Whisper. I know you're jealous with that.
What happens there stays there, I'm told.
But anyways, the hunters would send their falcons off to spot the prey, and then the Salukis would chase them down and catch them, and then the Ocotekis would get the hunter to the prey. And this is a type of lifestyle that went on for thousands of years. And it wasn't until recently that the forces started making it out of the Middle East and getting into people's hands. And I believe it's an Ocotecni that still holds the record for a horse winning the most gold medals at any Olympic event. And that was an Ocotecni horse. And
wow.
I think the horse's name was Absent.
Yes,
I believe. Yes. And no horse has gained as many gold medals as that horse. And it's also interesting, there was a famous endurance guy out in the Oklahoma area that used to collect all the famous endurance Mustangs out there. And, you know, he was an endurance man extraordinaire. And even he admitted that if there was any horse that could beat his Mustangs, it would only be the Ocotecni. So, again, we're talking about extreme athletes that, you know, there really isn't any comparison to. But I think because they're not familiar with people, they don't give them a chance. But, you know, if you're an athlete and looking for a horse that's going to take you to the next level, that would be an Ocotecni. But you need to know what you're getting yourself into. This is not going to be a quiet gelding or you know, laid-back mare. You know, they've got energy, but, you know, that's what they were bred for. They're bred for, you know, high endurance, and they still have that quality today, and people value them for that. Right now, the horse is the main stud book is out of the Soviet Union, and it was interesting when the Soviet Union took over Afghanistan. They wanted to improve all the native horses, meaning adding thoroughbred or something else into the horses that the nomads had. And the nomads valued their horses so much that they turned them loose in the mountains so that the Soviets wouldn't get a hold of them. And
wow.
Then a group of them decided to do a marathon ride through the desert, and I don't have the figure in front of me, but it was something insane, like 500 miles without water straight, and the Ocotecnis made it through just fine, and that drove home the point that these horses don't need to be improved. And so that basically saved the breed from getting a substantial amount crossbred, and they're pretty special horses.
Oh, my God. Look at this, Whisper. This is one magnificent horse. I mean, you can tell he's got a really smooth ride. He's been sort of cantering around, showing off here in this little paddock, which can't be more than 20, 25 feet by maybe 25 feet, something like that. And his back is as straight as you'd want. He's got these long pasterns with a really smooth ride. I mean, he's actually looking at the freeway, I think, wanting to go race those cars that are going by. he's ready to go. It's pretty clear. But he's absolutely nobly stunning. Just
yeah,
Sabrina said
he wouldn't run out of gas like the cars out there.
Yeah. And this one is like a dappled buckskin. He's got just a nice soft dapple. He doesn't have the black stripe down his back so much, but his coat, it couldn't be nicer. He's like a buff Orpington with a black tail and mane buckskin. I don't know quite how to describe, but he's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, he is the buckskin. That is the most common color for them.
Okay.
They are known for their metallic gold sheen. You can't really see because we're in the shade here, but they do get it all over their body. They're just gorgeous.
And then he's got a necklace on, which is quite dapper. I mean, it's much more attractive than like a tie. But is this like a good luck kind of piece or religious or just because he likes to show off his beautiful neck?
Oh no, they've always worn those. So I actually had one shipped to me just for his special day today.
It is. Oh, so this is a traditional costume for the horse.
Yes. And I believe if I'm pronouncing it correctly, it's called an Alaja, A-L-A-J-A. And they are very common. They do, some of them do wear more than one, but I thought this one complimented him.
Oh, it does. It looks like a beautifully woven textile, kind of the width of a sweatband, and it's around sort of halfway down his neck, kind of. And did you shave a portion of his mane for that to be in there? Is that what I'm looking at, or is that just a gap?
No. I wish that was the case, but his neighbor at the barn that he lives at is a little mini horse, and in order to mingle with the mini horse, he sticks his head through the pipe panels. And he has generously rubbed his mane off for me.
Okay. Well, I kicked it in place quite nicely.
Yes.
Would they ever put bells on there?
I have actually never seen the bells on them. Just
I would
the
think it'd make them run faster.
Yeah.
He's beautiful. Hey, are you single?
Yes.
He is single. He's proud of his tail, too. Cool. Then Jeanette's got her magic camera out. Now she's taking more pictures. This is a stunning day here in California. I got to tell you, there's not a single cloud in the sky. It got down in the 50s last night, so it cooled off really nicely. And it's like a perfect day for a fair. We couldn't ask for a better time here. So
that's awesome. Sounds like great weather for the show.
Perfect. Yet again, perfect. Yeah. So these horses are used for dressage. There's a little poster here of a hataki. It's not spelled the way I thought. It even has whisper. It even has here a woman dressed like an Egyptian with this fancy helmet with feathers and sort of belly dancing kind of clothes on, and she's backing. She's you know, she and her horse are one kind of thing. They're It's in fact, it looks like this horse, except it looks a lot like this horse that she's with. They're good for mountain climbing. There's another picture of them here going really straight up a steep slope, like straight up. Oh, my God. And jumping logs, of course, the dressage they excel at. So quite the horse for all seasons.
Pat, I have to ask, have you had any coffee today, or are you just on a natural high because you're at such a great event?
I'm just on a natural high. I was thinking about getting some, but I slept so well last night, and I slipped into the time zone here pretty easily, so I'll probably stay caffeine-free today. But, yeah, just on a natural high. You know, life is good. Life is good. So, Jeanette, what's next?
Jeanette? There we go.
Where have you been? Have we been to the chickens yet? I need to meet Oprah Henfrey, my Oprah Henfrey. I'm borrowing a chicken for the workshops.
Hey,
so
is Christine Heinrich going to be there?
I don't think so. She said that she might be able to come up, but she wasn't able to make a commitment, so we might be seeing her here.
Okay.
I hope so. I'd love to see her. I'd love to see her.
Yeah,
have you covered chickens yet?
Huh?
Go ahead. Have you covered chickens yet?
Yeah,
I was going to see if maybe the cattle folks want to talk to us.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we've got some Scottish Highland cattle here. They're the shaggy ones that you just want to go up and hug. That and give them a haircut or brush their hair. So. And they've got horns. They've got these wonderful horns. You see pictures in, of Scottish cattle.
Yep. Well, I'm going to
try and see if I can talk with someone. We've got two beautiful animals here, a butterscotch one, a rusty colored, and a black one. And try and see if we can talk with the owner here. The place that the cattle come from is Springwell Ranch and Vineyard.
That was Jeanette.
But the Highland cattle have actually been having a real nice renaissance and interest in their beef. And they're not a cow for warm weather. A lot of people love them because of their shaggy appearance, but they're actually not that great in warm weather. A lot of the folks that I see having them, like in the south, usually have big ponds that they can go into to cool off. But the meat is very good, and especially if you have the ability to market to like pubs or Anglophile type restaurants or Scottish festivals. You know, you can't get any better than the Scotch Highland cattle, and they make gorgeous oxen. And a lot of times you'll see when there are films done in Scotland, they'll have these, you know, iconic cattle in the background. And they're usually pretty laid back. And I've worked with some in the past, and they're very good mothers. And, they're pretty easy keeping cattle. They don't get huge. They're, they're a great cow for a beginner, so long as you respect the horns, because even though they're laid back, you know, they know how to use them. But I've been around a lot of them, and they've been pretty good, although Phil Sponenberg says the only animal he's ever been afraid of being killed by was a Scotch Highland bull. But I think, you know, the majority of them are actually pretty laid back. And so they're a great starter if you're in the appropriate area with, you know, cooler weather. And, what else could I tell you? They're very old breed. They're, kind of primitive-looking cattle, and they like to browse as well as graze. So, you know, if you have wooded areas, they're going to do okay there, so long as you don't have, like, a lot of, prickers, you know, that'll get caught in their fur, although, you know, they will shed in the summertime, but the owner here is brushing them out right now to get them all prettied up for the show. And it looks like she's got two cows here. And let me see if I can get her attention. Excuse me. I'm on the Backyard Poultry Show with the Chicken Whisperer. We're talking about the different heritage breeds that are out here. And would you be interested in talking about your cattle?
Sure.
Okay. Like I said, this is from Spring Hill Ranch, and your name is?
Karen London.
Karen London, and she's going to talk about her cattle.
Great.
My hands are dirty.
Hi, this is Karen.
Hey, Karen. Thanks for joining us today. We've got author Pat Foreman joining us as well. She's somewhere on the grounds there. And then, of course, with Jeanette, who you're talking to with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. And, yeah, she's just kind of going along and letting all of our listeners kind of listen to all the folks that are there and their specialty and their animals and the heritage breeds and a little bit of history about them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we have two breeds that I brought this lovely expo, is one being the Scottish Highland. They are the oldest breed in the world, approximately 2,000 years old. And they're known, obviously, being originally from Scotland. And Her Majesty herself has a herd of her own in her own castle, because the Queen only eats the Scottish Highland beef. We use my majority of the Scottish Highlands for showing, education, and for breeding. We also have the Wagyu, also known as Kobe, from Japan. And we primarily, these are for breeding and for show and education. They have some of the best beef
the best beef in the world. And a lot of the times is our farm is for breeding. We sell the animals for breeding, and we show the animals. And a lot of times we'll cross the Highland with the Wagyu for beef. And people will buy like a whole cow and use the whole cow for their own consumption, the steer. So we'll do like a 50-50 Highland Wagyu, and that's primarily for our beef stock. We have 65 head right now.
Wow.
And we have approximately 150 acres of forage. So they're about 85-90% forage fed. We'll do a little corn and alfalfa for protein. We are certified humanely treated through AWA, American, I'm trying to think of the welfare, thank you, American Welfare Awareness, or AWA approved, RFID approved, meaning no hormones and no steroids. And these are third-party companies that come out, check our ranch.
Mm-hmm, yep.
They stay with us to make sure there's no hormones in the, you know, so when we AI, we are not shooting up with hormones. When we go into heat, we're not shooting up in hormones. They are there right next to me, and when I see them jumping, I call the breed ABS. They come out that night, AI them. But majority of our Highlands, we have a bull, and the bull will service the females. But I have a handful of registered Highlands, and I will AI them with registered semen. Then I could show them at the National Western Stock Show in Denver, Colorado.
Cool. Very cool. So I guess how lucky you are to have all that great acreage for them to roam and eat, because with feed prices now, I was going to ask you about that, but sounds like y'all got that covered with the land you've got for them.
We do. We got the lands. Like I said, with this AWA, you have to have 80% forage fed, which we're well above that. We do, like I said, we do a little corn. We do cut grass. We do alfalfa cubes, and it's all organic. The feed is organic. The molasses is organic. It's really hard to find organic alfalfa. I mean, alfalfa right now is running $16 a bale. The organic alfalfa is running probably $25 a bale. It's insane, and you can't find it. You just can't find it. We have more Petaluma, so that's the heart of dairy, beef, poultry. So, you know, that's... We have the sources, but it's hard to find.
Right. Well, good for you. Well, thank you very much for joining us. That's fabulous. Hopefully we can get there maybe next year, put it on our list. But thanks for joining us today.
Okay, thank you very much. Oh, go ahead. Oh, no. I said thank you for inviting us. We really enjoyed showing the animals, and the animals love to be here, too.
I'm sure they do, getting all that attention, absolutely. Pat, you were saying something, Pat?
Yeah, I've got two folks here that might be really interesting to chat with. One is Claire. She's a volunteer, and we met when I was here last year in Petaluma. And what I'm going to do is pass my headset over, because if I take it off, my phone disconnects.
Right.
I don't think I can put it on speakerphone, so I'm going to, there'll be just a second. And then after Claire, I've got a veterinary student that's here checking the health of the animals, just looking for abscesses and then just making sure they're healthy. So but we'll just chat just briefly with each of these. So hold on, I'm going to pass the headset. Hi, this is Claire.
Hey, Claire, how are you doing?
Just fine.
So you're a volunteer there at the expo. Tell us about some of the responsibilities you have.
Well, right now I've been assisting the vet and the vet student that is here with him, and we're going around checking all the animals just to make sure everyone's healthy and that there are no communicable diseases that might get easily passed from, you know, one pen to the other.
Yeah, very good. That's always important. Now, I guess a lot of the folks, like just with poultry shows, we always recommend, you know, when they get their stock or their back to the farm, to keep them quarantined for 3 to 4 weeks. And so just as a precaution, if they happen to pick anything up at the poultry show, is that done as far as horses and cattle and sheep and goats as well? Do you find that people will abide by that rule?
Well, I'm not familiar with those practices since I'm not actively involved in any sort of animal husbandry. But these people that attend, especially this show, are so well educated on the practices that I'm sure that they, you know, there's a certain protocol that they follow.
I'm guessing most of the animals there do kind of make the checklist, and there's no problems. But what are some of the things the past few shows that you've seen that might need addressing?
Well, this is my first show, so I think the vet can probably tell you more about those sorts of questions. But I know that they just basically are looking for any lesions or abscesses or, you know, simple things like that.
Okay. Perfect, perfect. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
Yeah, it's amazing, but they've got a lot of volunteers here, and they're all working behind the scenes, really doing those countless jobs that make things seem to happen seamlessly. Thanks so much, Claire. Okay, next we've got Dan Haggerty. He's a fourth-year vet student, looking very handsome here in his jumpsuit, looking very much like a vet already, I got to tell you. So, Dan, I'm just going to pass the headset over, and then the...
Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and you?
Good. Thank you very much for joining us, and thanks for being there. So tell us a little bit about your responsibilities there at the fair.
Well, I'm out here with Dr. Dottie from Cotati Large Animal, and we're doing just some basic health checks on the animals. There's quite a few goats and sheep and few cattle, and we're just pretty much looking for any, you know, runny noses, any kind of signs of pink eye, any signs of lumps and bumps that could be abscesses of lymph nodes, and any signs of skin disease like ringworm, stuff like that. So it's, you know, pretty cursory exam. It's just going and catching them up and palpating them and just pretty general. So
yeah, keeping them healthy is what it's like, which is perfect.
It's mostly just to ensure that there aren't any contagious diseases that are being brought to the fairgrounds here, and kind of just basic animal health and biosecurity stuff. So.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. And I was asking the other young lady that was just on. Do you know if a lot of the folks that bring their animals? I know that. Kind of into the chicken industry with the poultry shows and the American Bantam Association and all the, and of course, the USDA. They kind of recommend once you come back from any type of show where your animals have been possibly exposed to who knows what in those close quarters, to kind of keep them quarantined for about 30 days before you kind of introduce them back to your existing flock when you get back. Do you know of anybody there that kind of practices that? Do y'all recommend that? With cattle, because like I said, we're not cattle experts, but I know it's done in the poultry world.
Right. You know, I think generally if they're vaccinated, they're up to date on, and they're not, you know, it's not a bad idea, but I don't know of many people that do that, to be honest with you, that have the facilities and capacity to do that. But it definitely is a wise decision. I think, you know, I think that just, everyone here seems very healthy, and you know, it's kind of, that's why we're here, is to just make sure that, you know, it's not some of those diseases that could be kind of devastating if they got into your herd aren't being transmitted here. So
exactly. Well, thank you for all your help, and thank you for joining us today.
All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All righty, we're probably going to wrap it up. It's about 1:35, so Pat and Jeanette, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedules there at the expo to join us. And a really great show. It's always fun talking to all the folks that are presenting there and the different heritage breeds, and kind of, you know, making us jealous that we can't be there too. So Jeanette and Pat both, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure. Yeah, go ahead, Jeanette.
Yeah, always a pleasure. It's a lot of fun, and hope to be here again next year.
And Pat?
Me too.
Sounds good. Well, I hope to see both of y'all, of course, in 2 weeks, or I'm sorry, in next month, but then I'm definitely looking forward to seeing y'all face-to-face at the annual conference in Cary coming up. So y'all have a wonderful time there. Have safe travels back home, both of you, and then we look forward to seeing you next month, and then, of course, the following month at the Expo.
Thank you.
That's right.
See you then.
Bye. Thanks, Whisper. Great.
All righty. Thank you. Bye-bye. Y'all have a wonderful time there. And so, yeah, maybe that's something Jen and I can put on the old calendar for maybe next year, get the camper all ready and head out to the West Coast. People out there have been begging us to come out for a time, and we'd love to come out there anyway. So it may be doable for next year, so we'll just have to see. So that's going to wrap up another show here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We thank you very much for tuning in, and we hope to see you tomorrow here at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. We hope you have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow. Ha ha ha.